If you love the Mixing Music Podcast but want deeper, ad-free, technical episodes, we've got you covered. Our Patreon gives you access to over 250 exclusive episodes and new content every single week, all focused on mixing, mastering, and engineering at a high level. For just $4 a month, you get practical tips and techniques that will instantly improve your sound. Join now at MixingMusicPodcast.com/exclusive. Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host DK, and with me today is our very special co-host and guest. I don't know if you're a guest anymore, but James Dean. James
Hello. Dean mixes. Welcome, my children.
Yes, James, again, host of the exclusive episodes available on our Patreon, mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive or /Patreon. They will both take you to the same place where we host all of our exclusive episodes and some freebies too. So if you want like a free PDF, like I think I have like a compressors PDF, and like I have my like mix prep guide that you can customize, copy and paste and customize to send to your own clients on how to prep stems for mixing and stuff. Like those are free. So all you have to do is join make a free account with the Patreon. You just don't get access to the exclusive episodes. So yeah. Sign up for free. And then get those free things. And then there are some, obviously some paid things too. We'll probably talk to Lou about getting like his vocal template in there for free and stuff. Other things too that I've done in the past. We're still building out our Patreon, but come join in, see what's up.
Yeah, and there's like over 200 archived episodes so far of the exclusive ones. Very technical, because obviously this is more philosophical on this podcast, but like on the exclusive, it's very technical. So you get a lot of that.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a reason. We were talking about this before the episode, but there's a reason why we talk a lot about philosophy, because I do think that to a certain degree, if you can't accept yourself, if there's no foundation of self-acceptance, then there's no point of learning the techniques, because no matter what techniques you implement, as soon as you get a revision and you hate yourself enough to like take every single revision note personally, then like there's no point of being a good mixer if you can only project every single revision note as a personal offense of some kind. So I think so, like foundationally speaking, I think that's a big part of the reason. I think most mixers, both at home for a hobby and those pursuing mixing as a career, just creatives in general, need to focus on the fundamental self-love kind of foundation to then realize, like, if you suck, it's a one-off thing. You did one bad mix that was subjectively bad, not even objectively bad, subjectively bad. And that doesn't mean that you are an objectively bad mixer.
Yeah. Yeah. There's many, even like Grammy winning mixers who would still occasionally just get like, they send a mix and they get it back just like, yeah, we didn't like this mix.
Yeah. There's just that. Jesse made an 8-minute YouTube video a couple days ago. Jesse Ernster, our good friend of the podcast. He, where he basically talks specifically about what projects he missed out on. He's like, oh, if I had Kaliuchis, that would have changed my career quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And then, he specifically addressed the things that he missed out on, the things that he didn't miss out on that was accepted, and then navigating, well, first off, addressing that even professionals at his level with Grammys, right, gets rejected constantly, misses out on spec mixes or like shootouts, right? And yet he can very easily take it personally, but also choose to admit that he has it good already.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And kind of finding the balance between those two. It's very difficult to address, but I don't think you can handle missing out on a Kaliuchis thing if you were given one shot and not hate yourself over it. There's like people in the comments of his video that said like, I had one shot to work on this one record that won a Grammy and they missed out on it and I cried about it for like 3 days.
Yeah. It's like, I think it's a matter of like mentally getting yourself to a place where you could at least be able to handle your next mix.
Yeah.
It's hard mixing when you're not confident. Like if you're struggling with confidence and you're mixing, it is hard to mix because you're a lot more second guessing of like the technical stuff.
Of course. And this is a big part of the reason why we talk about the philosophy. Because at that point, like, Jesse is as close to being objectively a good mixer as you can possibly get. And if even he struggles with losing a ton of really high-level spec mixes, yeah, dude, us at anywhere lower than him would also struggle.
Yeah.
Like, it takes a lot of self-compassion and grace towards self to get to the point where you can take rejection at that high of a level.
Yeah. This isn't even the topic of today's episode, but I feel like it's a very important tangent, to go on.
Yeah. Well, today's episode is another thing that I think is kind of related to this, a little bit more philosophical, but as well as trying to be a little practical here. What did you say you wanted to talk about, James? You said specifically.
Oh, I think it's good to talk about like what to do, how to handle when things are slow or when things are just at like a normal pace. I think it's easy to, let's say like you had like a really busy 2 months and then it goes from crazy busy to just semi-busy. It's very easy to feel like you don't have much going on or something like that, especially in mixing more specifically. Like, or if you're in a period of like, you just did a bunch of mixes and like, you're now just like taking care of revisions or waiting on revisions or maybe you are just in a period where you don't have as much mixing work going on at the time. I think it's good to talk about what we should do, how to handle it, things you can do, because it feels good to like do what is in your control and to understand what's not.
I should have recorded this. I forgot that I didn't turn on the camera. Should I record it now?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Is it too late? I'll record while we're doing this episode, although we're a little bit late now. But so if you're on YouTube, this is just a picture of the podcast until partway through. Anyway, no, I have a lot of thoughts about this.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, there was something that I watched this morning. From Chris Williamson, Chris, the Modern Wisdom podcast. Is it Williamson? I forgot. But anyway, we talked a little bit about this. There's the concept of just general how to get over yourself, like removing this irrational fear of being unproductive and tying productivity and efficiency to self-worth. That is not natural, not good necessarily, or serves a purpose as you're younger, but as you get older, may not. There's also the idea of like battling the, if we're talking like, if you're not fully busy every single day, you can't pay rent. So like financial fear is a completely different thing than like the idea of self-worth. There's like financial pressure. There's a lot of different ways to approach this conversation. And then there's the concept of you just like mixing. You know, and so it's like you're bored, like you're like unfulfilled, like you want to just mix more, right? And so like vacations are hard, not because you're financially stressed or because you feel less meaning, but it's like you just like mixing so damn much.
Yeah.
All right. So there's that perspective as well. What do you want to start with? What do you want to talk about? And first maybe explain, because you had this super valid question probably from a specific experience.
Oh yeah. Well,
so maybe let's talk. Is it okay? I don't want to.
Yeah, no, that's good. Last year was a very interesting year. Interesting for a number of reasons. It was a really great year. It was a year that was a lot more planting seeds and starting relationships that very luckily this year I'm seeing a lot of results from. It was a year that the first few months were very wild. A lot of I like had the most mixed work I've ever had. And then it varied during the summer. And I think a lot of mixers I talked to, like there were a few months last summer that were just like very little work in general in the entertainment industry. And it's a really weird feeling going from having an insane amount of work. You're starting to feel like, okay, look, sweet, I'm just going to have this all the time. And then it goes away like very quick. It's like a battle, like trying to figure out what to do during that time.
There's something that I felt recently, which is I had the craziest January.
Yeah, wild January.
Not only was January, February just like hyper packed with projects, But in those 2 months, I made more money in those 2 months than I ever have in my entire career thus far. So we're talking financially, we're talking about like hours and just general business, but just across the board, like quite frankly, to a point where I was overwhelmed a little bit. Possibly speaking on my threshold of capability to be overwhelmed has lowered as I've gotten older too. That's another topic we could talk about. But I also saw that this, like, it's difficult as a freelancer with fluctuating income to not see this very large harvest to be a bad omen of a famine, an upcoming famine. That's so irrational. That's not how it works, right?
Yeah.
It's not a net zero game. But I saw that and I was excited, but I had this irrational anxiety of like, oh, does this mean that I'm not going to have anything for the rest of the year?
Yeah.
And that's something that is irrational and I've proved myself wrong because I do keep having some stuff. But yeah, it was just so fantastically busy the first month, which is such an outlier because usually January, December is dead.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, there's unnecessary anxiety that came from that. So tell me about your experience a little bit.
Yeah, I can say stuff I did.
Yeah, what
that time.
Did you do to make up for that?
It was a lot of finding. I like looked out for a lot of networking events to go to, like past Oxes. Maybe we could dive into like what I do there in terms of finding, or I don't know if that's like should be more focused on a finding kind of episode, but I did a ton of those. This sounds like a very odd, but it was very helpful advice that actually Eric Emery, who he mixes for a lot of Travis Scott, or not Travis Scott, Travis Baker, like Blink 182.
Barker?
Like, Travis Barker. Yeah, he like does a lot of work for them. He gave me really good advice because I was in the middle of this period of like all this stuff, and he's luckily very nice. I met him at an event. He gave me some advice on like things he still does, even with all the success to find. And he recommended two very interesting apps, Bumble Business, which you would never expect because it's a business. It's a app where people go to hook up or to date, or for people who tell themselves they just want to date, but they actually just want to hook up kind of thing. And but there's also a business portion on it. And he said he's found some really big clients through it. And there's that, and there's this one app like Vamper, and I'm not like advertising, but it's just like those are things that like if you have a kind of mind where you almost want to put in a certain amount of numbers of something every day, a lot of people, their mind really wants to crave like hitting a number checkpoint. It's in your control how many people you reach out to through apps or things like that. I went through that a lot, and I actually found an album that actually is being worked on right now, like a client, and it's going to be like one of my biggest paying projects that I'm working on. And I was able to also recommend him to a producer friend who it's going to be one of his biggest paying projects that he's producing, all through a dating app for business people. Anyways, it was just like a matter of just, I just found any outlet of reaching out and planting seeds that I could do. And even with that, that doesn't feel like every hour of the day. And so there was a lot of battle in me having to come to terms with being okay with like, there's just going to be a chunk of the day where I won't have as much to do. And I think it's something like I grew okay because I would like to be able like, okay, I've reached my max amount of like outreaches I could do on these apps. I've like looked through all I could to like find out about any events. I think there's like something you have to teach yourself of like after all you quote unquote like can do to be like, it's okay if I kind of like sit down and play Xbox for a little bit. Like, yeah. I think that's a battle people have. I think that's a battle you used to have, but like you got a lot better at like you used to kind of feel almost guilty playing video games, but you seem like you've gotten comfortable with it.
Yeah, that's less about having to do with the need to feel efficient or effective and more about just projecting what my parents told me.
Oh.
So it's kind of related, but not in the way that I would assume. And so let's talk about this then. First, I want to break it down into just the desire to be effective. And then we're going to talk about financial etc. And then along the way, we're going to write down these practical tips that you have. So you said about the Bumble business.
Just
going to general networking events if you have time.
Yeah.
But I think the first thing I want to talk about, which you kind of addressed, but I want to address a little bit more deeply. Chris Williamson, Modern Wisdom, really intelligent guy, really great guy. I love his podcast. So does my wife. My wife is, you know how like every kind of business male YouTube, I've said this too many times, but maybe the people on the podcast haven't. They have like a demographic. If they ever share their demographic, it's like 99% men and 1% women that listen to their podcast.
Yeah.
That my wife is always the 1% woman. Yeah. So she really likes him too. He brought up, there's a little clip I watched today where he shared something that he's been personally struggling with, which is directly related to this podcast, which is this desire to be, he described it as a pivot or a transition from being the worker into being the ideator. So like before, in the younger stages of your business, it's very easy to correlate self-worth with how hard you're working and the ability to execute ideas.
Hmm.
Like to do mind-numbing work and saying the number of emails I replied to today directly reflects how good of a job I've done.
Mm-hmm.
How many people I talked to, how many product I sold directly reflects how many people I've done. And then he talked about after a certain point, there's going to be a point where that's no longer beneficial. Because at the end of the day, like, why do you work so hard? It's so you can have time for yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when is that pivot? To then realize that, oh, I don't have to work hard for myself because I should be taking time for myself. Is there like a financial benchmark? Is that like a philosophical benchmark? Is that just like a feeling that you get comfortable with? How come some people never ever reach that? How come some people reach it too soon? And that's possibly the downfall, their demise of that's an argument that I'm willing to make. But anyway, that was the point. Is like, I do think just like for a time, David Goggins was like really, really beneficial to me. That like you a bitch mindset, like that just struggle through everything that who else? Who's that guy? Gary Vee just struggle, like quit complaining, just put your boots on the ground and do it. Like that was really, really helpful for me when I was young.
Yeah.
That was like, I'm not going to deny that for a specific moment in my life, that was necessary. Not just helpful, necessary.
Yeah. A lot of people need that kind of things to at least get out of the hole.
Yeah. Or whether if they're better off and they just need a reminder or if they need to get out of a hole, I don't know when, but for me, it took me out of a dark spot and made me realize that I am empowered to change my life, which was something that I needed. Do I like Gary Vee and David Goggins' mentality now? Absolutely not. Like not at all.
Yeah.
But I think I will not discredit that. I will not talk shit about it. I will not say that they're wrong because that was right for me at that time.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not right for me now. And that's a decision that I've determined, a pivot that I've made. So when things get less busy, for those that I think is a natural go-getters will start to feel bad about themselves for feeling ineffective.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a very natural thing, something that we both relate to.
Yeah.
And then that's big part of the reason why, another practical tip here, why I started running. I'm pretty sure a part of the reason why I started running is because during the slow days when I have less to do, I don't feel ineffective.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to say for sure because that's in retrospect.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure that that's one of the reasons that it helped out with, that I felt an emotional relief from.
That makes sense. Looking back on that time, I was going to the gym a lot more because, yeah, just...
This like, it's making up for this insecurity of not feeling ineffective,
yeah.
Not feeling effective.
You like feel like you did something.
Or yeah.
Like, it's an outlet.
Yeah. And I actually don't, to this day, I think that that's part of the reason why I still run a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's a good coping mechanism and
yeah.
not something that I overly toxically rely on, which is a whole different level.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I'm not ignoring my responsibilities in order to, and I'm not running away from them by running. Right.
Yeah.
It's a healthy coping mechanism that I've balanced. Also, like, it's running. I can't run that much. Like, like I can't just run away from my problems with running. Like, I will get tired.
Yeah, you could try, but it'll catch up.
So I think one is to recognize that it is normal, human, and expected to correlate effectiveness, efficiency with self-worth.
Mm-hmm.
Let's address that. But I think it's also important to recognize that that's not true.
Yeah. I think it is a thing to recognize with efficiency. I think people think certain things are efficient that aren't. I think burning yourself out is an insanely inefficient thing to do. Like overworking yourself, even though people think that that is. But yeah, I think taking time for, like you said, self-care is very efficient too. I think a lot of people struggle with that.
For sure. Yeah. Burnout is a very nuanced topic that I currently don't have a strong opinion or conclusion for. I know some of the counter opposing opinions that I have currently on burnout
mm-hmm.
are like, one is I think a lot of people society falsely believes that they're burned out. So like they're convinced by society who's like, hey man, don't be burned out, take it easy. And they're like, maybe I should take it easy. And some of those people are taking it way too easily, mostly because of pressure from society and not because
they actually— Yeah, there's a false sense of burnout. But then there's the actual
And then there's people that are on the opposite end.
Yeah.
Yeah, people that are naturally ambitious that don't know how to govern their own ambition.
Yeah.
That burn themselves out. And then there's also the concept of like psychologically speaking, people that burn out typically have higher levels of openness and neuroticism. So there's like specific personality traits that are trackable by data to show what types of people are statistically more likely to burn out faster than others. And then there's techniques or ways to focus on to keep people from burning out. And so I think with that, so there's so many counter opposing opinions that I have that's why I don't have a really, really strong opinion. But in general, burning out is a bad sign. First off, like I think it's important to recognize when you are burning out, if you are burning out, or if this is just peer pressure to burn out.
Mm-hmm.
And then recognize that obviously burnout isn't good. And it's usually some sort of lack of balance of something. Because I think that you can work really, really hard, work harder than the normal person. If you're especially ambitious, like whether it's genetics or whatever.
Yeah.
If you're just genetically ambitious and it's out of your control, it's just a nature thing. You're less likely to be burned out.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot. And it's not working less that's going to stop you from feeling worse. Like it's usually a balance of working more. Like how to balance working more and taking care of other things. It's not usually working less, which would make somebody naturally ambitious feel worse as well.
Yeah.
So I don't know. There's a lot of, anyway, getting a little bit on the table.
Back to, like the what to do when there's not much going on. I think there's something too, and that is very okay. And I think culturally we need to feel more okay about it is when there's not much mixing work going on, especially if it's something that you rely on more financially, it's okay to take another job for that time.
Yeah.
To take on my father-in-law, he gave really great insight. Shout out to my in-laws because their daughter married a guy who's going into a very unconventional career and they've been very supportive. And I have like a side job that I do outside of mixing. I'm not at the point yet where I can make enough off to just live off of mixing. And
in LA.
Especially in LA, yeah. Oh yeah, I would be a million, not a million, but like if I was still living in Utah,
I'd have a house in
making,
Utah.
Yeah, we would, dude, no, I would own people. Bad. Yeah, it would be wild.
I would own people.
chat, clip that. No, I'm kidding. It was such good insight. I didn't realize, because at the end of the day, what we do in the music, whether you're a producer, mixer, we're entrepreneurs with our own business. He said that they don't stress or worry about me and like financially, like how things are going, because they know that if I'm not having much work in mixing, I always make sure to still make ends meet. And he said that's what people don't get about real entrepreneurs is that while they're building up their business, they still are doing things to make sure ends are being met. I think people think entrepreneur means that I got to go all in and just not make any money for the first little bit. But it's like one of those things where like when work is slow, sometimes I think it's okay to be like, yeah, I'm going to just take up some other job, some other work for this time to like kind of seal the gap. And that needs to be, I think people feel very insecure when they feel like they have to do that. But I think it's a very important thing to feel okay about.
Yeah, this is a pretty harsh and non-accommodating statement, what I'm about to make.
Yeah.
So take this with nuance. I'm not being super certain about this.
Yeah.
We're not accounting for mental illness and just general depression or whatever.
Yeah.
To your point, it is incorrect. It is possibly blasphemous in the scriptures of entrepreneurship to sacrifice day-to-day responsibility to chase a dream. That is not what it is. You can't, it is not, you don't drop everything to pursue music.
Yeah.
That's not how that works.
And I thought you were about to say like I was wrong for like wanting to
stuff. You're, you're exactly right. But yeah. The reason why I brought up the nuance is because there are a lot of people who project passion and sincerity by focus.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, if you do anything else, they're not serious enough.
Yeah.
And that is not the case. That is not the case. There, it's being an entrepreneur is an increased responsibility, not a replacement of responsibility.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
There's, and this is something that Gary Vee has famously said. It's just like, why do people talk shit about people that have a 9-to-5 to support their day jobs? He has two quotes. One is the concept that businesses aren't made from 9-to-5. They're made from 6-to-9. They're made from 6 to midnight or whatever, 5 to midnight or whatever it is. And then meaning that it's something that you do in your extra time. The second thing that he usually says is that why do we perceive taking a part-time job to support the thing that we actually want to do is a bad thing. Isn't that more honorable to do something you don't want to do in order to be able to do the thing that you actually want to do?
Yeah.
Like that sacrifice. Is an honorable sacrifice that shows integrity.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, he says, I don't know why society gatekeeps or like projects that's like a lack of focus. That's not what it is.
Yeah.
And I know, and this is specific to our industry. I'm sure that this is just across the board with other sectors too. So this is just availability heuristic. This is just me knowing my industry and having bias from that. I think there are way too many people in our industry that are pursuing a career in music and whatever, as an artist, as a producer, as an engineer, whatever. Hyper creatives that have somehow rationalized foregoing personal responsibilities like paying rent and paying for, some people have like spouses and children, you know, and at the very least, like feeding yourself healthy foods or like taking care of your body as like as they're foregoing all of these more primary needs as an excuse to be like, because of focus, I'm focused on my craft.
Yeah.
And they're like foregoing their responsibilities. And that is, you cannot do that. If you cannot take care of your personal responsibilities when you have nothing else going for you, what makes you think you all of a sudden can when you have things going for you? It is backwards. Like if you can't be a nice person when you have no money and you're struggling to pay rent, what makes you think you will be a nice person when you have the money to pay rent? And like, no, that is exact backwards thinking.
Yeah.
Good people don't become good when all of a sudden their needs are met. That is not how good people function.
Yeah.
It's a false logic.
I would say that like some of the artists that I work with that take the work most seriously and like you could tell they kind of have things together and they're like making consistently great music. They are ones who still work their other job and they see that other job as like, I'm working really hard at this so that I can afford to like do music or things like that. And those are like my favorite. Some of those guys are like some of my favorite like artists that I'm working with consistently.
There was somebody that I was talking to recently that recently became a manager for an artist. He's new to music industry. I think he just has a buddy that is a rapper or something like that he managed. And we were talking about it. And then he was trying to hire like a videographer or something like that, along with like possibly like a better tracking engineer. And somehow it came into the topic. I was like, yo, in this industry, with the supply and demand of our music economics, creativity is a high supply, low cost. It's in high supply and it's very low cost. What is low supply and high demand and high cost is conscientiousness. It's the ability to work within a deadline, work within a time frame, reply to emails, be strong with your communication skills, not take things personally, just like move projects forward in a very conscientious manner, mm-hmm. that's what pays the most. That's the thing that every A&R, every manager is willing to pay top dollar for. Yeah. There are mixers that are possibly better than me, or at the very least, the same level of me, right? That I make way more than. And I honestly, when it comes down to it, it's because of that. It's mm-hmm. conscientiousness or my foundation that we talked about earlier, my lack of ability to take things personally, you know, or whatever it is. And that's the thing that people don't realize is when we're talking about balancing.
Yeah, balancing when work is
like
slow
and when stuff. Thing works are slow or whatnot. But I think it's important to, I forgot why. What this had to do. Sorry, I'm losing track of myself. But I think that this is something that is really, really important.
Yeah.
And people, you need to take care of yourself. So when things get slow,
yeah.
if that means you need to get a part-time job or you feel some irrational shame because you do music on the side after your 9-to-5, that's, I'm giving everybody listening permission to not feel shame for that.
Yeah.
That is irrational and it's not true and you shouldn't feel shame for that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think yeah, you should feel comfortable getting a job. You could even look at it as like, okay, this is a good chance for me to like maybe put in a lot of hours for like a different job and to like create a financial cushion so that when the work picks up again, I'll like have like a bit of like a cushion financially to be able to focus on that until they pay the invoices and like things like that.
Of course, like an in-between thing.
Yeah.
And the cool thing about like working at Starbucks or some other, you know, part-time job is that you can get hired with no experience and then you can quit whenever you want with no real repercussion.
Yeah.
So, yeah, dude. I mean, yeah. even 3 years ago now, I had a slow winter or I was coming up on a slow winter and I was financially, I think I could have gone into savings to do it, but I just don't like touching savings. Like me, for me personally, I don't know why. If I have to dive into savings to pay rent, then what's the point of savings? Like, I don't want to touch the savings, which yeah. is why they're there, you know?
Yeah.
So if it seemed like I was going into a position where I would have to touch my savings so to pay rent. So I preemptively got I Googled for seasonal jobs and I got a 40-hour a week seasonal job working for Tesla from November, end of November into like the first couple weeks of January. So for like a month and a half, I worked at Tesla. This is like 3 years ago. And I made ends meet. It like, and it did a couple things that were really beneficial, which I've briefly touched on previous episodes of the show. One, made me realize how much I actually love music
mm-hmm.
and how much, because I had really good coworkers. And so what it did is it gave me some more friends, something that I really needed as a lonely engineer that works from home.
Mm-hmm.
It gave me a friend. It gave me stability. So I had to, with the scheduling, I had to wake up early, had to go to bed on time. It gave me some sort of like reset back to some sort of structure, which I think was really good for me. It also made me not worry because I had somewhat of a stable income.
Mm-hmm.
And that was nice to feel. And then I think, again, I already said this, but lastly, I think the most important thing was it re-energized me. To yeah. be like how much I actually love mixing.
And that's the point I was going to bring up too. Like those periods, even though like maybe in the time they could sometimes feel sucky, like it always comes, you always come out of it when you start getting gigs again, just like so excited and like grateful to be able to like start mixing again or start producing again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do this practically like, it's unhealthy and it's not good and it doesn't work for everybody. So don't do what I do. But every 2 years, I take a 1 month long, extra long vacation, usually to Japan.
Yeah.
And usually every year, every other year. And I purposefully make it long enough because like a 2 week vacation, perfect. It's a little bit long, depending on where you go, what you do. But it's like enough where you feel rested.
Mm-hmm.
3 weeks, also possibly perfect. 4 weeks, a little bit long.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of 4 weeks, for me personally, I'm like hungry to get back into the studio. I'm like, oh, I've had the time to like think of ideas of what I could do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like get back hungrier than ever.
Yeah.
And I do that a little bit on purpose. Like that extended vacation gives me more fire.
Yeah. No, I like that. Yeah. But anyways, yeah. Those are things to do when it's very slow. And I think a way to handle when it goes from very, very, very busy, just like normal busy, Because right now, it was similar to you where I had a really crazy January, February. And now it's just that like normal busy. I have to like remind myself like me during the summer, for example, last year would have killed to be in me doing what I'm doing right now. Just having like a relatively steady flow of clients. So I think it's just a gratitude thing. People get into like being grateful for what you have and stuff. But yeah.
Yeah, I think it's human nature to have, in order to be gratitude, you have to know what it's like to not have that thing.
Yeah.
Which is, it'd be better for us to every single second of the day to realize we currently don't have a headache, you know, and make a neutral a positive thing. Like, oh, dude, right now I don't have a migraine.
Yeah.
Because usually that neutral thing, when we do have a migraine, it's all we can think about and how horrible it is.
Yeah.
But why are we not grateful when we don't have a headache? Like, that's not something that comes to mind. It's very neutral.
Yeah.
So how do we turn the neutral into positives? And unfortunately, it seems like a lot of the times it's easiest to do that when you have something extremely bad happen. For example, like even with Kyo being in the hospital for like 7 months and not finding out until after he was born that he has a disability. Like, that was quite a shock to the system. At the same time, getting screwed over by some roommates and finding out things about my parents, we're not going to talk about that into that. But like,
DK had a really hard part in his life.
Yeah, had a really, really unnecessarily hard.
It seemed very personal from God, what was happening to DK.
It was irrationally and unnecessarily hard. What it's done is it's created a moment. It's created a perspective where like, now, like, I genuinely think I'm a better dad now because I know what it's like to not be able to father my children for, it was only a 6 month span, but mm-hmm. I was in LA while they were in Utah.
Yeah.
But like, I genuinely think I'm a better dad than average because I am more fully aware of how blessed I am to be able to have them with me.
Mm-hmm.
And that took, unfortunately, that took like a really long, painful, unnecessary struggle to get there. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so let's go back to this, first off, the concept of emotionally going, like connecting the need to of self-worth from efficiency and effectiveness. One, I just want to point out that that's obviously irrational. And it's only you. Who's the one that's wrong? Is it the one that is not being effective wrong, or is the one that's being overly effective wrong? Where is that line? Mm-hmm. And my answer is the person who draws that line for others is the one that's wrong.
Mm.
It's the line drawer that's wrong. It's not one side or the other. Because I don't know your life, and you as the listener, I can't determine for certain whether you're being too much of a bitch and you need to work harder and you have way too many excuses, or you should probably take it easier. I cannot determine that for you. And this is a reality that you're going to have to deal with, is that only you can make that that line for you if you decide to draw a line at all, right? So this is one thing I don't want to do, and I want to address the nuance there. That being said, if you struggle, if you feel like you need to do more, things like going to networking events, doing Bumble business, creating an account on Engine Ears, you know, going crazy on social media. These are all things that I don't need to tell you. And it doesn't take a high IQ to ideate these things.
Yeah.
It doesn't, unfortunately. Whether you like me hearing me say that or not, you're a creative human. You as the listener who does music, is pursuing music, are a creative human being. Fucking get creative with what you can do with your time if that's what you feel like you need to do.
Yeah. Yeah, some people need some kind of measurable goal. And if you need that, you probably already have an idea, like you said, of what things to find.
And at the bare minimum, listen to more episodes of this podcast, subscribe to the exclusive content, or just like read a book.
Just put a lot of money into the Patreon. That's something you can do.
The another thing, and there's a lot of nuance to this, and we say this constantly between the two of us, is I'm doubling down on this. Is if you have free time and you don't know what to do, work on clearing your conscience.
Yeah. Whatever that means for you.
Whatever that means. Whether that's through a religious process or doing things that you've been avoiding. And it's not about doing the things. It's about recreating and rebuilding the foundation of self-love, knowing that you can do these things. It's like, if you feel like you should be doing something and you get into the habit of doing those things. It's not even about the benefits of doing those things. It's about knowing that you are the type of person, having the confidence that you are accountable and have integrity with yourself, which I think goes further than any gear. Like that goes further with clients and with income than with any sort of gear or interface or microphone or Mogami cable. Honestly, like if you actually take responsibility for yourself. And some people demand way too much of themselves. And maybe clearing your conscience is putting in the work to realize that that's not possible to cope with that much self-hatred. And then putting in the work of doing the thing that you know you need to do, which is go to therapy and deal with that. Or you're the type of person that like, I should be running. I feel like I should be doing that. Or I like eating healthy. Like I'm a little bit too fat right now. It's not even about whether or not you're fat. It's about you feel fat. And so you feel like you should be doing something. Yeah. So you probably should. It's not bad to be fat, but if you feel guilty about it, that's a conscience you should clear.
Yeah.
Because, anyway, that's something that you could do with your downtime.
Yeah, creative outlets.
Creative outlets as
I got
well.
Really into film photography then, and now it's something that I'm still passionate about, but it was like then that like got me super into it.
Spending time with friends.
Yeah.
General community building. Like make friends, dude.
You'd be surprised how many people in the mixing community you could just like message, hey, do you want to grab lunch? And they're down.
Dude, even outside of the engineering community too. Like there should be
getting lunch.
A lot of musicians I find are really lonely.
Yeah.
And they like kind of reject that or deny that.
Yeah, we're in Make LA. Friends. No one's busy during the day. We're in LA.
That's a crazy, crazy accurate thing to say. Crazy and accurate.
No, benefits, if you go to the gym before 9, empty. You have it all to yourself, packed during the day.
Oh my goodness.
Anyways, that's just an LA thing. But yeah, it's just…
Dude, I remember when Lou posted on Instagram, he's like, dude, the gym on Valentine's Day is really empty. And I'm like, dude, that's a regional thing because in North Hollywood, that bitch is full.
It is full. Yeah, I feel like it'd be more full.
Full, dude.
Yeah.
You live in Orange County where there are families and people that actually believe in love.
Yeah. Who have families or whatever lame people call it to get to.
Nah, dude. That's so funny. I do think going back to what you said about hobbies, like if you want to do like join a bowling league, I think that's a good use of time. Like if there's something that you like, a fixation that you have, if you don't currently have a fixation, try to find one. I think it's a useful time.
Yeah.
Right now it's coffee. It can be mechanical keyboards. It can be running. It can be bowling or film photography or like
you guys probably
whatever.
Caught on that DK has ADHD.
Yeah, I have a new hobby every 3 months. I collect hobbies. But I mean, I think that's like a really good thing. And like force yourself to find community through your hobby.
Yeah.
I think that goes a long way. Like a lot of people I think feel way too lonely.
Yeah.
And if you're less lonely and you like have something to work for, I think that despair from burnout and being too busy would be satiated a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, cause like now, if like I really, really am fixated on bowling, which is not
Are you actually fixated on bowling?
No. This is an example. Like, I'm really fixated on bowling, and all of my work is to make time so I can go bowling. Then all of a sudden, you have less reason to get burned out. Like, you have purpose to your work, right? And I think that's a really good thing. Then it gives meaning because then you're working for something else, not working for work itself, which is a practical and conscious removal of self-worth to efficiency, effectiveness.
Yeah.
So yeah, and other practical tips that you want to add with this?
No, I think those are the main ones. We could do an episode in the future just on like general finding, because you and I have had very different finding techniques, but I've had successful results from them. And so we end that like another episode.
Yeah, like you found clients from studio open houses and networking events.
Like 90 to 95%.
Which is crazy because I have a straight 0% on that.
I have a pretty good strategy on those. So that could be good at.
Zero. Yeah, and it might be strategic.
Yeah.
But it might be a demographic thing too. Like who's going to those events and who's my clients.
Yeah.
It could be a lot of variables.
Yeah.
Who's to say? The last thing that we want to talk about is the difficulty of dealing with financial turbulence, the highs and lows of finances and dealing with that. I think it just comes down to don't be afraid to get a temporary job.
Yeah. I and if you ever find one of these, just hold on to it. Like, I very luckily have a job that's very flexible. It's almost up to me how much hours I take on. So it works great for if I have more mixing work, I do less hours there. If I have less mixing work, I could take on more. So if you ever find one of those jobs, like, hold on to it all you can. But yeah, like, it's very okay to find a temporary job if you need to, especially if you have like a family and you need to like make ends meet and stuff. It's just like there shouldn't be shame around it. It's just like, if anything, like DK and I were saying, like, it's very respectful. Like, that's what makes an entrepreneur, is like, you will still make sure ends meet.
Yeah. Entrepreneurship is committing to an increase of responsibility, not a replacement of responsibility. That's a good quote from earlier.
Yeah.
Sweet. Oh man, I'm so eloquent. I'm so good with words.
He's an eloquent man.
No, I just.
You would never guess it. I think that's all. That's all I can think about.
Yeah, with the finance thing, I think one, acknowledge that that is a real anxiety to have, that you're not alone if you have that anxiety. Two, reminder that this is not a net zero game, meaning that if someone else gets a gig and you miss out on that gig, doesn't mean that they're taking away from you. There's a lot of work to go around. I mean, objectively, this industry is small and there's not as much work to go around in this industry than almost any other fucking industry. That being said, there is enough, it's better to optimistically believe and act as if there's enough work to go around, and to not, because what you don't want to do is start treating James getting a gig as me getting one less gig.
Mm.
That scarcity mentality is not just bad for my own psyche and my own outlook on life and my ability to be compassionate to others and to give grace to others and myself. It's just building a false sense of ego that is super counterintuitive to my own mental health as well as the compassion of others, right?
Mm-hmm.
But as well as, it's better to believe in that because you treat others better, not just yourself, but others better. And you treat your clients better when you finally get clients again.
Mm-hmm.
It should lend itself to gratitude, which is the basis of great work, I feel like. Because how can you mix well if you're stressed about paying rent?
Yeah.
This has got to be good. So then you start getting in your head and you overcompensate by doing more things than you need to.
Yeah, or like, Taking bad deals,
of course.
Yeah.
I was even just thinking about the art itself. Like, dude, like, imagine mixing knowing that, like, this is a spec mix and if I don't get this, I can't pay rent. Like, how poorly will you mix that song?
Like, look at Bruno Mars, for example.
What? How does that...
To clarify, I love Bruno Mars. I think he's very talented. He's putting out a lot of what one would call formulaic pop because of the gambling. Is this a whole new thing?
Oh, like his recent
that he's the $50 million in debt, and so he's working like someone who is.
Is he $50 million in debt, actually?
Everyone just Google it. Oh, this is something. Yeah.
Is he a gamble or something like that?
It's a whole, yes.
He's just doing money grab songs?
Yes, but he has made some pretty great songs out of it. But anyways, it's kind of like a...
Whoa.
Yeah. Not to talk shit on Bruno Mars, to clarify, I love his music, and I think some of the stuff he's been putting out in this situation is good, but... Yeah. I don't know why my mind made that connection, but...
There you go.
There you go. Yeah. That was a very unnecessary ending.
Well, I mean, and then the last thing is like, you love... I don't know if there's much to say about this, but like, you love the work so much. This is the problem that people should be striving for. Like, you love the work so much that you get anxious not being able to do what you love because you're waiting for projects. It's not about money. It's not about being busy and connecting self-worth to busyness. It's about you genuinely love the craft and you get antsy not being able to work on it. And that's a good problem to have. I think most people don't ever get there, don't have the capacity to get there, don't have the headroom financially and the headroom self-love wise to be able to feel that in that way.
Oh yeah.
I don't really know if that's a problem. I think that's an indication of like a good thing.
Yeah. I like that.
I'm not prepared, but there's something to be said about like Haslow's like hierarchy of needs and stuff. And possibly saying like we should all be more Rick. This is like more like Rick Rubin-esque, but also probably psychologically backed. Maybe I should ChatGPT this to get credible sources. But something about the idea of at first when we first get into it, before our prefrontal cortex and our hippocampus develops or whatever it was, I forgot which part of the brain it was, you know, where you're just fully self-centered. Like you work for money, you work for self, and then you work for your family, and then you work for your home, and then you work for your community. And then eventually you're like, reach this level of like, I'm doing this for the world. But then you eventually want to get to a level where you're doing it for what Rick Rubin calls a tribute to God. What others would determine a, you're doing it for art itself, for the advancement of art. You're doing it for beyond civilization, but for the universe. These are all interchangeable things. And I think it's important to address your needs and where you're at right now and make sure that you've taken care of yourself. And here's the thing. If I catch anyone slipping, oh, dude, I'm about to say something pretty strong, but I'm going to stand my ground on this.
Okay.
Because I think it's at the very least, it's better to believe this than to address the nuance of this.
Mm-hmm.
What's stopping you from fulfillment, from meaning, is not access to money. It's not access to teachers. It's not access to a specific studio or an accolade. It is not access to having good parents. It is not it was not a missed opportunity because you had a bad upbringing. It is not any of those things. For me to completely deny and say those things don't have an effect would be incorrect and illogical. But only you can determine this for yourself. Are you unfulfilled and possibly being an asshole because of trauma and the way that you were raised? Or are you using trauma and the way that you're raised as an excuse to do what you really want, which is to be an asshole? I cannot determine where that line is for you, but I am not convinced that the people who use trauma as an excuse to be an asshole actually have a valid reasoning to be an asshole. I am more convinced that people want to be assholes and they're using their trauma as an excuse to be so. I am not saying that for certain, only you can determine that. But I am biased and I hate it when people be like, I can't do this. I'm not able to do this because I'm not a Nepo baby. And just like with Bruno Mars, whoever celebrity, they had the money and the funding to do this. Yeah, to every single example of someone that had money and got into it from money, there's an equal and possibly stronger example of someone that came up from complete poverty. And if you have to address one side, you must address the other side. It is dishonest to only address one side. There is no integrity in only addressing one side. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I'd say that's fair.
Sure, it's unfair to not have Nepo parents. But it's also unfair. And the problem with anything that I could possibly say is that there is nothing that in society, in American Western society currently in this point in time, there is nothing that I could possibly say that would make someone that is fully convinced that they will never have the chance because they've never had the funds. There's nothing I could possibly say that could convince them that they are empowered, that they themselves have the power. That is a fruitless endeavor that I am chasing right now. It is only that individual who can, through whatever sacrifices and whatever difficulties, through pure integrity and pure intention, can overcome themselves to realize that they themselves had the power to begin with. And another caveat to that is to then not weaponize that obvious relation to self-empowerment to blame those that What I don't want to do is oftentimes people weaponize this concept to say, bro, it's you're within your power. Nobody's oppressing you. You fucking, you're just a dick. And they weaponize this. And that's evil. Nobody should weaponize that. That's wrong. It's immoral. I rebuke anybody who weaponizes this realization of genuine autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, way too many, especially young creative people, blame way too much on the lack of funds, on the lack of opportunity to not be able to address their own mediocrity. And that leads to cognitive dissonance. That, more than anything else, leads to anxiety and depression. This is why we say clear your conscience and focus on clearing your conscience. Do what you know you need to do. Another Chris Williamson quote that I love so much is, the magic you are looking for is in the work you are avoiding. I love that.
Yeah, that's a cool quote. Cool. Amen. I agree.
Yeah. I think that that's, do you think that that was a good way of like addressing the nuance of empowerment versus actual difficulties? Like, if someone has one less, if someone is blind, they have real actual struggles to do well in this industry.
Yeah.
But there are also, there's famously a blind guy that does exactly what we do in our industry. There's a couple of famously legally blind people.
Yeah. If you're deaf, a little harder.
Dude, Beethoven, dude. Beethoven.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't. Well, not a little, a lot harder. I agree.
Was that a good balance of nuance?
Yeah. Yeah. I've always, and we had, you and I talk about this a lot, I think it's okay to accept and understand circumstances you come from, but it still is at the end of the day up to you what you do with it.
Yeah.
And kind of where you go from there.
And in general, society and peers will reward you feeling bad about yourself.
Yeah.
It's very enticing to blame everything else because you get rewarded for doing so. That's the one thing that's different and unfair, is that there is a, for those that have indulged themselves with self-pity, there is a great and spacious building of mocking those that are trying to overcome self.
Yeah.
Just as much. So it's less socially rewarding to take responsibility for yourself. It is a personal reward and personal fulfillment and a very personal journey.
Yeah. I agree. I don't think I have anything else to add on top of that.
Anyway, does that answer the questions of the original thesis, which is what to do in our free time, what to do when there's less work? I think so.
Yeah. You decide.
Yeah, there's no magic antidote to chaos that we have.
Yeah. I think that's what kind of like why a lot of people like you and I like the work. We kind of like the chaos a little bit.
I thrive in chaos for sure.
But we also like the organ. Like, I think that's a mixer thing in general. Most mixers I talk to, they tend to like both worlds.
Yeah. I also think that that's kind of like the level of what we're doing. Because like, I think you can't do what we do at the level we do it at if you don't have a blend of high conscientiousness and high openness.
Yeah.
Meaning like very creative and also very ability to do repeatable, like being stable. So chaos and order.
Yeah.
No. It's crazy because there's also, you haven't spent as much time with the demographic of like day-to-day low-level recording tracking engineers and mixers and stuff, where they're just like fucking chaotic as shit.
Yeah.
And just like can't maintain a single client long-term because they're just incapable of being reliable. They're just incapable of being reliable.
Yeah.
But there's
that's
a, in
that's
LA.
Its own subject. Yeah.
Yeah. In LA, there's a lot of, for every good engineer, you haven't fully seen the palpable, for every one good engineer, there is at least 100 terrible engineers floating right now out here.
Yeah. But that's a conversation for another day.
That's in the conversation for another day. Yeah. Anyway, thanks so much for listening. Again, if you like this podcast, if you want more practical tips, join our Patreon. Again, there's free stuff on there. At least do it for the free stuff.
Try it out for a month. Like the paid one if you want to. Like it's.
I do think, you know what? I'm going to make a code. I think I can do a code for like either half off or like something. I'll look into it right now. The first 3 months will be 90% off. I'll make a code. Yeah. Where do you want to make the code?
Where do we want to make the code?
Yeah, I don't think it, Patreon, I need to look again, but I don't think there's a way for me to do free, but I can make it practically free, like 90% off or something like that.
Yeah, we'll look into what deals we could do, but we'll, if we can.
But let's do a code right now. Let's make the code Pepsi, since you're wearing a Pepsi shirt.
Pepsi, the code would be Pepsi.
Pepsi, type in Pepsi and you get 90% off the first 3 months.
Yeah.
I think we can make that happen.
If this makes it in the episode, then yes.
This will be in the episode. I'll do it right now, right after we record it.
Cool. Yeah, go check it out though. It's, again, we're nourishing the psychological side here, but you also need to make sure you're always becoming a better mixer. And that's what we'll be taking care of on the Patreon side.
I'm also looking at the waveform of the recording for this episode. I'm realizing that I did 90% of the talking, James. Can you say a couple other notes so I feel less guilty?
A couple other notes in general. Silent Hill 2 is a really good game. Sing Sing is a really underestimated movie that came out last year. I believe in mythical creatures unironically.
Like what? Like a unicorn? Like,
I don't
wait, hold
know.
On. Like Western mythical
it's,
creatures?
It's, oh, like,
or like
in
Australian
general,
animals.
I
believe in Australian animals.
Well, yeah, because those are like scientifically real. I don't know. I believe in them. It's not to a degree that I would argue their existence, but like if a Pegasus landed, I'd be like, oh, cool. So there's something you guys learn about me.
Fun fact, James.
I believe in ghosts.
I like. All right.
In elementary school, I was a severe bully, and it was an issue. But then I became best friends with the kids I bullied growing up.
I wonder, because you also said when I was in elementary school, I was fat. And then you showed me a picture of when you were in elementary school. And I'm
turns
like,
out I just
not-
had body dysmorphia.
Yeah, you
up.
Weren't fat, dude. You were normal.
Everyone in my life called me fat, like very openly. And so I just
maybe you
I
were bullied. Maybe you weren't the bully.
Maybe I
you
was.
Were just a victim of bullying.
No, it was more like friends just like giving crap. Like, that's it. And it was like never like, oh man, I'm fat. It was just like, yeah, I'm fat. Like that's just kind of the thing. But yeah, anyways, that's
well, and then
more things.
On Sunday when you wore a suit. You said that you had lost some weight.
Yeah, that was weird.
Good for you, dude.
Yeah, it was like a weird…
And the way that you said it was funny too, because it was just like, I just happened to find out. Like, I wasn't intentional. It was just like, I just found out that I lost some weight. I could fit in this suit better.
Because I don't track it. Like, I don't even think we have a scale in our house. But like, I just put on pants that was like… I remember like last time I wore them was like, they're intentionally like fairly tight. I don't know what else to say. Play Silent Hill 2.
Yeah. And go subscribe to the Patreon.
Yeah, subscribe to the Patreon.
All right. On that note, happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy. If you love the Mixing Music Podcast but want deeper, ad-free, technical episodes, we've got you covered. Our Patreon gives you access to over 250 exclusive episodes and new content every single week, all focused on mixing, mastering, and engineering at a high level. For just $4 a month, you get practical tips and techniques that will instantly improve your sound. Join now at MixingMusicPodcast/exclusive.